welcome to another exciting edition of Tox Talk. This is Matt Zuckerman, Toxicology Fellow at the UMass Division of Toxicology. I want to thank everyone who's listening and everyone who participated in our online contest to win a copy of the Lang Poisoning and Overdose book by Kent Olson. The contest, in case you missed it, was available on our Facebook and Twitter feed at ToxTalk, T-O-X-T-A-L-K, and we were trying to get listeners to see if they could guess who our celebrity guest would be, who we were interviewing. We got some great suggestions, great guesses. Great suggestions for future shows to interview. Unfortunately, nobody guessed right as to who we were interviewing, and so we'll have to figure out who to send that copy of the Kent Olson book to, although if you don't have it, I recommend it. It's a good reference. And for future contests and future updates, feel free to check out our Facebook and ToxTalk Twitter feeds. But I'm very pleased that our guest interviewees for today are none other than the founders and current directors of the Arrowhead Center and the Arrowhead website. They go by Earth and Fire Arrowhead. And for this episode, we are lucky enough to interview them. Now, this is a great opportunity to talk to people who are involved in our field in medical toxicology, but who are not classically trained medical toxicologists. They definitely are providing a valuable and different viewpoint. And I think as I did, there were certain parts of the conversation that I agreed with more or less than others, but it was really actually surprising and nice to see how much overlap there was to see between the two viewpoints from somebody coming from a classically or a medical toxicology physician, allopathic viewpoint, and definitely two people who have really spent a lot of time trying to educate others about the effects of particular drugs. And so that's one of the great things about doing the show is we get to hear from people that we wouldn't always get to talk to. So I'm certain that some of you have been on that site. I highly recommend checking it out, Arrowhead, E-R-O-W-I-D, and maybe wondered where it came from and who runs it. So this is a great opportunity to do so. Now, we actually ended up talking for quite a while on this interview. There was just so much to cover, and so it became kind of lengthy. So rather than tiring you too much, we're actually going to chop this interview into two parts. So this is the first part of a two-part interview, the interview with Earth and Fire Arrowhead. And then you can catch the second part on another segment, another show, just to keep this in digestible bits. So without any further ado, here is the interview. Matt Zuckerman from UMass Toxicology. I'm just trying to reach, I guess, Earth and Fire Arrowhead.
You've reached Earth and Fire Arrowhead.
Very good. Great. Hi. Thank you both for being available. I wanted to have the chance to talk to you because I understand that you are the bright minds behind the Arrowhead website.
Yes, we're the two co-founders of the site. I'm Fire, and Earth is the male voice you're hearing. We started the site together in 1995.
Okay, yeah, so that's 18 years
yeah.
now.
18 years now, yep.
And it's been, for those out there that aren't familiar with the Arrowhead website, I'm sure you, actually, how would you describe it?
It's an online library about psychoactive drugs. We focus on more kind of the psychedelic range, cannabis and pathogens like ecstasy and sort of newer drugs, but we also cover things like pharmaceuticals and herbs and smart drugs.
What we don't primarily focus on are the drugs covered most often by other references, which are the opiates and some of the methamphetamine or, you know, the
right.
more traditional basic hard drugs are less our expertise.
Okay, yeah, and I have to say it's a great site. If anyone who hasn't checked it out should check it out. It's very informative, and I mean, as a medical toxicologist, it's very nice because it's almost like a medical text in a way. I mean, everything is broken down in kind of a hierarchy. And there's definitely an approach to systemically approach the different drugs and even a certain amount of moderating in terms of trying to keep things relevant, it seems like.
That is certainly our goal. One of the things that is not often known by everybody is that the site is all edited and reviewed information. There is no ability for the public to come and just post something on the website.
We used to have a guest book, but even that's been taken down for a decade now. You know, it's probably one of the most common misunderstandings of the work is that is referred to as a forum and grouped with other forums online, which makes some sense because people do submit information that we then review and publish, including firsthand experience reports, which is sort of the most forum-y stuff that we publish. But
everything has been read by an editor and approved for publication prior to publication.
And I think that's definitely, if you're familiar at all with the variety of sites in terms of some of the bulletin board sites versus other sites, you can definitely get a sense that what's posted is moderated to try and keep it relevant, but also try to avoid maybe extreme views that aren't the general view. It reminds me a lot of what I use a lot is Micromedics, which is it's kind of a pharmaceutical formulary for different drugs, and it's got dosages and side effects and adverse effects. And it's probably the closest thing I've ever seen to that for sort of non-pharmaceuticals. So how would you, I guess the term illicit substances might be marginalizing. How would you would describe them as psychedelic substances or?
Psychoactive.
Well, I mean, the highest level umbrella term that we use is just sort of psychoactive. And we're really, part of the reason for the way that we frame things is that we kind of see a lot of arbitrary lines that get drawn between pharmaceutical drugs or recreational drugs on the basis of whether the use is approved or not. And it's one of the most difficult things to talk about in kind of the current political and legal context, that any time one starts to make the distinction about why people use things or how people use things and
or what the harms are or what the benefits are,
it becomes very political very quickly, and so you get sort of set on one side or the other of sort of whether you're kind of pro-drug or anti-drug in some capacity.
So we try to look at the broad category of psychoactive drugs, which we would define as drugs which have a noticeable effect on the thought process, the way one thinks, the way one acts and behaves, and treat them all the same, regardless of legal stature, whether they are prescribed or not prescribed, whether they are being used medicinally or for a spiritual religion, religious purpose, or whether it's for recreational use, or whether it's for whatever reasons.
I think that's definitely true, and I think the flip side to that is that's also when we see traditional pharmaceuticals, some of the ADHD medications with amphetamine properties. I mean, traditionally, in particular dosages, there's an argument that they help children in school or help people focus. However, we also know that when combined with other agents or when taken in amounts that aren't recommended, people have either recreational or other effects.
Right.
And so, yeah, we often like to label things as good or bad, legal or illegal, but I think one of the commonalities between the way that you're approaching the substances and the way that a toxicologist approaches the substances is it doesn't really matter about the law. The real question is, what is the effect on the person? And so what prompted that? I mean, was there, in terms of putting it together and putting it out on the web back in 95?
Well, I think that for people of sort of our age and older, was fairly familiar. I think it's slightly different for people who are sort of younger and grew up with a fairly advanced web, but people who are in their 40s or later, when you went to college, you pretty much got exposed to a whole new variety of psychoactive drugs that maybe weren't available to. When I went to college, the first week of college, I was offered ecstasy, mushrooms, LSD, cannabis. I'd never tried any of those things, and pretty much it all scared me, right? I was told in high school that all those things would destroy my brain, and so it seemed very strange to me that I was put in the position of making all of these decisions on the basis of recommendations from my elders, who in those cases were people who were 20 years old, and so that was sort of a disconcerting kind of thing to have happen going off to college.
And it was difficult to find actual, if one was the sort of person to want to actually look up what recorded data there was about dangers or risks or doses or benefits, that was very difficult to find in 1995. You could try to go to the library at the school and look up drug-related books, and you might find something by Leary, or you might find something, there were a couple of books you could, one of the things that we often sort of joke about is that, one of the options was, well, do you order a book through interlibrary loan about drugs when you're 18?
Put it on your college ID,
Yes. So that's sort of where we came from in terms of, in 95, we'd been out of college for a couple of years, and it seemed like looking into the data, it seems like somebody should be collecting that and making it available to other people.
There were other sites at the time, and we were sort of participating in groups of sort of discussion and archiving. It was sort of more of an archiving project of taking stuff that was pre-existing and collecting it for personal and kind of...
community.
Yeah, academic community interest. I mean, we were more focused on kind of traditional use, kind of ayahuasca and kind of history focused. Both of us are sort of history.
Culture, history, anthropology.
Whatever. And so that was more the original focus, was more kind of the spiritual traditional use stuff. And then pretty quickly it became obvious that we were actually, although we had initially kind of started the project as a site for more advanced users, people who are sort of like academic interest level, people willing to read papers and articles and things like that. We moved quickly to providing more basic information because some of the absolute basics of sort of what the dose was that people actually used of ecstasy, whatever, was not super easy to find.
How did you see the site evolve over time, sort of in terms of responses to audience demands or change in the particular psychedelics that were psychoactive substances that were used at the time?
Well, I would say that you know, what Earth was just describing is one of the very large changes that happened over time is that it became clear that the very basic information needed to be there before to provide context for the rest of the more advanced data that we might be interested in talking about. If we were talking about the Central American use of peyote, one would want to first have the ability to actually have the data available to everybody who was looking at that about what that was, what the doses were, what the effects of the substance are. You have to have the basics before you can talk about anything beyond the basics. And so we definitely had to back up and fill in.
There was not, in 95, there, in 96, 97, there was not a Wikipedia that you could easily just sort of point people at that reliably could sort of answer basic questions like that.
So I would say that's one of the zones, but I would also say that we've developed a better understanding and I would, over time, as to who the audience is for the information, and I think that the audience has changed and grown some over time. So while we were initially in the very early years targeting more advanced interest, you know, higher education, you know, level college students or graduate students, over time we have realized that in fact a lot of high school students are looking up information, and
right.
Also a lot of toxicologists and physicians and.
Right, because we're a very small project organization and very small organization, and so we need to leverage the work that we do and kind of focus on things. We don't go in for kind of lower grade, younger targeted.
We aren't targeting high school students.
Targeting younger people because it really requires a totally different kind of.
Voice
and presentation to be able to provide information to really young people. And so we're really looking for people who are sort of college student level or kind of advanced high school or higher. And so
but knowing that we do have a high school audience of some size, part of what we need to do is make sure that our information is not misrepresenting things that would be misunderstood by high school students because we have, you know.
Right. Probably the main thing that's kind of always running through our head as we're doing our work is that the primary people who initiate contact with or try new substances are people who are sort of in the 17 to 25 range. And there are people who are older than that or younger than that who are trying out new substances, but that's the vast, vast majority of people who are actually experimenting with psychoactive drugs.
It seems like there's definitely reading online reference sections similar to yours. There can be different viewpoints and different aims and goals, and it seems like you're sort of initially approaching it from a very ethnocentric or kind of sociologic approach to the substances and how they're used. And trying to approach particular effects on the brain. The flip side to that is, while it's not universal, it seems like certainly there are a large number of, especially younger people, who are kind of maybe just looking to get high.
One of the things I would say about that is that as the internet and web have become sort of ubiquitous and available to everyone, it's a problem everyone has. And we, I think, became pretty comfortable pretty early with the idea that our goal was to present factual information that we didn't have a problem with anybody accessing because we were able to stand behind it as true as we were able to get it to be, and that real, reliable information is not something that should be hidden from people, and that if that's going to be accessed by high school students as well as 80-year-olds and professionals and parents and everybody, that's okay.
It's definitely one of the kind of the primary complications in the work that we've done is the different communities of people have actually create barriers of, you know, information transmission intentionally, that the police don't think that the kids should have access to information, and the kids are trying to hide from their parents and the police, and medical people have a kind of a different take on that and sort of like how that information is distributed, and actually different countries seem to have different kind of medical cultures in terms of toxicology and the way that they relate to publishing information about street drugs and street drug use. But we actually are kind of take hits from all sides on that, that in a lot of ways there is a substantial subculture of kind of the people who use recreational drugs or people who take antidepressants or take pain medication. There's actually a lot of different ways that people relate to that in a way. Like the kind of the mainstream issue is kind of some number of people who take pain medications feel guilt about needing to take pain medications, where there are other people who are sort of much more open about their use and willing to talk about it. There's a lot of people who, like, some people are happy to talk about their use of Viagra, and some people are never, ever, ever going to mention it to anyone. And so there's a, you know, we've got a fairly complicated problem in terms of talking about the way that people interact with psychoactive drugs and who is willing to disclose and what the demographics are and how that skews the information that gets provided.
And yet I think one of the universal things is that a lot of people think that it's reasonable for they themselves to have access to all of the information that's available about psychoactive drugs because they are a reasonable person, of course, but that other people should not have access to that information, whether that's because those people are going to misuse it and use drugs that they shouldn't use, or whether that's because the police shouldn't hear about the new drugs that are available and so they ruin the markets for the kids or whatever. It's not at all uncommon to have people think that somebody else shouldn't have it, but it's okay for them to have it, and that happens on all sides.
Yeah, being a physician, I can definitely identify with that viewpoint.
Yep.
So it seems like your site and your approach and even your willingness to do this interview, thank you very much, and your talks and history, you try to work with all parties, it seems like, and you definitely work with, I guess, people, quote unquote, from the system. Have you ever faced pushback from groups or supporters of psychoactive substances who felt like you were too conservative or too kind of ruining the party for people by exposing something to either the police or something else? It seems like you imply that sometimes there was some pushback.
I think that we've gotten pushback from both sides, from all sides, from multiple sides.
But the answer to that is definitely yes.
Yes.
We received direct and specific private and public negative feedback about exposing.
Being too conservative or being too crazy. Being too, you know, publishing too much or not enough.
We're too freaky for the straights, and we're too normal for the freaks. And I mean, that we definitely have that issue.
But we're reasonably comfortable with that. Also, I think that we consider that to be the value of the organization is in large part in being in the middle and publishing for everyone and getting everyone to be working off of a shared data set and not prioritizing one side or the other, yet working with all sides. Because one of the things that we try to describe to people is that we can't know what's going on the streets without talking to the people who are using psychoactives, and we can't communicate the important information from the user side to the professional side without talking to the users, but we also can't communicate the other direction, harm reduction information, information about what the latest research is and what the medical issues are without talking to the professionals. So being in the middle is where we feel like we can do the most good.
An example of a kind of a really problematic place that we're often have been for a long time in is with new drugs. Is when do you first publish about new drugs? Right? When should a reasonable person start telling their children, or at least not hiding the books or whatever, not creating web filters that disallow the child from finding out about the new drugs? So something comes out. People start using it, people start posting to forums about it, people start writing about it, you know, at some point, like if you go on national television, right, and every channel says there's this great new drug that all the kids are using, don't use it, right? That will prompt a substantial number of people to go out and try the thing, right?
Oh, yeah, I think that was documented happening, I think, in Germany when some of the synthetic cannabinoids were first coming out, and there was a news story kind of warning of their danger, which is a great way to get young people to try something new.
Right. It is not our goal to be advertising the latest and greatest drugs to the world, but it's also, at some point, when people are using a substance on the streets, then there needs to be information available to those people.
It's hard to provide just the people who happen to have purchased the whatever some random new drug online. You know,
they get the information.
Only they get the information. That also seems a little bit weird and suspicious.
Right.
And so, people should have dose information. People should have medical interaction information if that's available. People should have, you know, sort of what the, you know, whether it's a stimulant or a depressant. Ideally, emergency room doctors and toxicologists, people in poison control centers would have access to the most up-to-date, most reliable information. And I don't know a better way to generate that currently than what we're doing.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And you kind of alluded to this before when you talked about, you know, having to talk to people who aren't willing to be open or honest about things. I very rarely walk up to somebody and say, hi, I'm a medical toxicologist. I'd like to know what substances you're using lately so I can better understand them and treat patients.
Right.
You don't get an honest answer.
Right.
And that's one of the great things about the internet in terms of some public postings is
right.
The anonymity has allowed some people to be a little more candid with their use. I think I appreciate the site because it does provide an interface between parties that don't necessarily talk to each other. Do you feel like that's changed, that's altered a little bit, like the idea of an online presence, an anonymous online presence that people are more candid with, maybe descriptions of what they're using or how they're using?
Sure, of course. I think that you know, we have, over the last 18 years, now been able to collect, I think this week we might hit 100,000 experience reports, personal descriptions written up and submitted to Arrowhead about people's individual experiences with some particular psychoactive drug. So 100,000 people have been willing to submit relatively anonymous reports of their use. That clearly didn't happen, 20 years ago.
Right. So when we were preparing for the interview, I asked some of my colleagues, you know, questions that they would like to ask you or that they were considering, because we went over kind of the mission statement just for the listeners out there. I think I got this straight from the website, is that Arrowhead is a member-supported organization providing access to reliable, non-judgmental information about psychoactive plants, chemicals, and related issues, working with academic, medical, and experiential experts to develop and publish new resources, as well as improve and increase access to already existing resources and maintain a historical record for the future. It seems like the basis for Arrowhead on some level is the idea that information is good, and that providing information to people is an inherent good, and that that allows people to make better choices.
Right.
Is there any view, so, I mean, that's a very kind of libertarian approach in some respects. Is there any drugs or any choices that should be limited for public safety, that information is not the key to?
Well, I think the first thing that I think we should state here is that Arrowhead is not a policy organization. We are a library and an educational organization, and so the organization itself does not attempt to propose what policy should be. That doesn't mean that we don't have opinions about it, but it's a really complicated field, and it's not at all an easy answer.
I think the most important thing is to think towards the future. It seems clear to most people that the policies related to psychoactive drugs over the last 100 and some years have not been the most optimized, best thing for all humanity. And it seems as if we are hoping for an improved policy future around recreational drugs, pharmaceutical drugs, et cetera. And so what we believe is that there needs to be better information in order to inform those future policy decisions. So as far as sort of limiting people's behavior, I mean, of course, we are all in favor of stop signs. We're completely in favor of the idea, we support the idea that everyone's choices need to be in relationship to the people around them and the society. So it's not, you don't get to,
it's not just a free-for-all. It doesn't really work for everybody to just do whatever they want whenever they want. There are society rules. That all makes perfect sense. What those should be is a complicated question. I think that, to very specifically in answer to your question, it seems, yes, there are drugs that are extraordinarily dangerous, and we would rather people not use those drugs compared to something else. There are behaviors and things that people shouldn't do, generally. How to define what those are is not exactly our zone, but we think that those decisions will be made better.
We hope
that those decisions will be made better with better information available.
I think that's an honest answer. And I think it's difficult, too. It's interesting because I feel like there's a certain difference in terms of generation and time with both the type of psychoactive substances that are available, their strength, their potency, their effect,
right,
and also how people use them. And especially in recent times of just a number of new agents coming out that are, I mean, I think people that used 30 years are just saying, oh, my God, this is not your grandfather's marijuana,
yep, right,
in a way, or something else.
Well, it's one of the biggest problems with the current set of policies and implementations that is going on, that basically is a direct predictable outcome from prohibition, is from the prohibition of, from the way of regulating these behaviors has been to try to make, is basically to use the penalty of criminal law. And so new drugs are all basically going to be scheduled, right? If they're any fun at all, people start using them, they'll get controlled and they'll be prohibited. And that creates this evolutionary pressure towards more potent drugs and newer drugs, because if they're more potent, you can fit more into a container, into a smaller space to go between borders, go across borders. And if you have a new drug, it's harder to detect, it's harder to it's not necessarily illegal, right? So there's this evolutionary pressure towards new, more potent drugs that it seems like an obviously negative outcome for the society, right? That we would actually rather have people using
less potent, more known,
right, less psychoactive known drugs, so that there's, I mean, one of the reasons that caffeine isn't super, super dangerous for the society is that we have it in relatively low-dose format, so that you can kind of overdose on your coffee at Starbucks, but you're not going to die, right? But if instead at Starbucks they were just selling, you know, sort of
bags of powder,
right? If they were just selling a, you know, 10-gram bag,
they'll probably start doing that next week, but yes.
Occasionally, somebody would take the whole 10-gram bag, and then they die, and that's...
kind of where we're at.
That's kind of where we're at with kind of the new recreational drugs, is that, or any, no, let's call them new recreational drugs. A lot of the recreational drugs is that people are buying the 10-gram bag, and the dosages are in the milligram or 10-milligram range, and
they don't know what they have.
They don't know what they have, and it's, you know.
No, that's definitely been a tragic outcome in numerous cases. I think I was reading recently about, I think in Australia, there was a number of people thought they were getting, I think ecstasy is the classic thing where a lot of people think they're getting MDMA, and then sometimes there's PMA or something else in it, which has log difference in typical dosage and effect, and that can lead to kind of some adverse outcomes. So do you feel like some of the newer agents that are coming out, some of the synthetic cathinones and synthetic cannabinoids, are more dangerous than some of the traditional stuff?
Well, I think that you could make the argument that simply by being less well understood, they are more dangerous. Now, I don't think that kind of holds all of the water, but I think that there's a strong argument to be made that if I were choosing what people were smoking in dorm rooms, I would probably choose cannabis over some random chemical they bought off the internet. But I don't know that, the main danger.
The sheer volume of new chemicals, I think, makes the answer to your question have to be yes to some degree. I mean, there are clearly more dangerous new drugs. There are a number of new drugs that are more dangerous than the standard traditional drugs of the 80s. If you're going to name LSD, mescaline, psilocybin, mushrooms, cannabis,
ecstasy.
You know, if you name the, you know, methamphetamine, heroin, and you know something else, that some of the new drugs are clearly more dangerous than what they are replacing.
Right. There's this weird, one of the weird effects of kind of the last 20 years, 30 years, is that there was this long period kind of from the late 60s until basically 2000, where the DEA had failed to dismantle the LSD manufacturing and distribution system that had been set up in the 60s. That there was a group of people and a number of different groups of people who had been producing LSD and putting it onto blotter and distributing it internationally. And in 2000, basically that kind of ended, right? The DEA successfully busted a group of people and dismantled some of the network. And one of the unpleasant side effects of that, even if you're in favor of dismantling the international LSD trade, is that now what comes on blotter can be a wide variety of different substances, and there's actually kind of less acid around. And so we don't really know. People who take what they think is acid or LSD, they're probably often taking some of these super potent new drugs, which then again, people in your field, sort of people who have to deal with the kind of medical outcomes of that are
confronted by not knowing what people have taken and not knowing what the real dangers are and why hospitalizations are happening and
I think that the kind of the traditional information for sort of how to deal with somebody who was way too high on acid was basically sort of keep them calm, you know, probably give them some benzos and, mm-hmm. and either strap them down or put them in a room. And I don't know that you get to make that, you tell me, but it seems like you're now in a position where you can't really rely on sort of somebody who seems to be in a psychedelic freakout. You can just sort of, pat them on the head and giggle behind their back, while they go through their unpleasantness.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. I mean, with some of the new agents, we're worried about potency and, I mean, especially when some of the synthetic cannabinoids came out and people were just expecting pot that wouldn't show up on their talk screen, but really we're getting, everyone was sure it was PCP mixed into it. So definitely there's that, and you don't know how sick people are going to get. People are getting muscle breakdown and rhabdomyolysis and kidney failure. And then the other thing is also because these agents are just so mysterious, both in exactly their nature and where they're coming from. First of all, even discovering that the synthetic cannabinoids were an artificial agent sprayed on to otherwise herbs. It's interesting because it ties into the whole idea of, which is the bane of my existence, which is the idea that natural is safe. And so anything that's a nutrient supplement is exempted from regulation in the U.S. And so I guess you get people who think they're plants, but they're actually getting a pretty potent chemical. And then they come into the emergency department, not to wander away from the topic, and you don't know how to treat them. And so they could become very sick. And so, I think it's definitely broadened the range of toxicity that we're seeing with some of these agents.
Well, that was really a great chance to talk to Earth and Fire Arrowwood about a wide range of things, starting with the history of the site and what they aim to do, and really finding some common ground between a medical toxicologist and others who are observing and writing about and even using some of the substances that we research. I hope that you enjoyed it and that you continue to enjoy things. You can hear the second part of that interview on our next episode, so stay tuned. And once again, if you want to stay in touch about what's going on with us, you can check us out at our website, toxtalk.org, or find us in the iTunes store. Additionally, you can always find us on Facebook or our Twitter feed at ToxTalk. Once again, Tox Talk is a production of the University of Massachusetts Division of Toxicology at the Department of Emergency Medicine. This is Matt Zuckerman signing off.